You are listening to episode 134 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
AKA the late Smooth Jazz.
Welcome everyone, we are back after a brief hiatus, also known as my PC's video card decided to say, you know what, I'm not going to work anymore. I'm your host Arnold, joining me tonight is Taser, and were it not for him, I probably still wouldn't have a replacement part. Many thanks, dude.
No doubt, man, no doubt.
Also joining me is the man whose only version of PC trouble is when his sister won't give it back to him, Brian. Brian, what's going on?
You mother... Hello, Arnold. Nice to see you.
Love you, bro. So how's everybody doing?
Let's just get on with the
show. Dave, let's get on with it. Yeah,
mad,
so,
bro? Mad? You mad, bro?
You mad, bro? Yeah, you mad, bro. We didn't record last week for PC issues and drama, and I wanted to record last week, too. The day we were supposed to record was my birthday, so... That was last weekend. So many shenanigans
ensued. He turned 22, folks.
Oh, 29.
Old man, old
yep,
man.
Yep, last of the 20s.
Yourselves.
Last of the 20s.
I can't, I'm 41.
Hey, no problems there. We have a nice age demographic going on here. But yeah, other than that, it's been good times. I'm glad I got my PC all fixed up and good to go finally. Again, Taser, thanks for that. But we're going to go into Brian with the news.
All right. Well, coming up first down the old news pipeline are a series of teaser posters that have been released by Marvel over the past couple of weeks. Their meaning is not entirely clear, much like when they came out with the first posters for when they were relaunching all the series right around the time of Marvel Now. And what we get with them is some fairly, you know, confusing things. Others are pretty much straightforward. For example, the first one to come out was Of the Dead, quote-unquote, scheduled for fall of 2013. And actually, as contributed by one commenter, Zombie Master George Romero said he might be writing a Marvel comic book at some point. So could this be a Romero-authored Marvel Zombies comic book thing going? Maybe. Coming up next is First. Not much more than that. It's number one, and the one is comprised of all the names of different characters in the Marvel proper. And the third and most recent teaser to be released is a series of tally marks that look like scratches reminiscent of Wolverine claws, coming to a total of 52. Now, we're not really sure what any of these mean yet, but if the Marvel Now lead-in was any indication, these mean new titles, new storylines, something along those lines.
I saw some of those, or I saw all of them, actually. The Marvel Zombies one, I was very much not intrigued or interested. To be honest, until the George Romero name came in, I love zombies. That's, you know, Walking Dead, all of it, zombie, anything, I'm there.
Oh, yeah.
I wasn't really that big of a fan of Marvel Zombies. Maybe I need to read more, but I read the first series, and it seemed pointless to me. And this was even after reading when they did the whole mini-zombie thing in the Ultimate Universe with the Fantastic Four. I still even gave Marvel Zombies a shot, and I just wasn't with it. But I completely forgot that way back when, however long that story was, that George Romero mentioned he had something coming up from Marvel, but he couldn't say anything else. And we all know, if it's George Romero, it's going to be zombies. So if those two things are linked, that's maybe might pique my interest a little more, and maybe I'll give it a shot, or at least pay attention to it a little bit more, as opposed to kind of brushing it off like I was pretty much doing before I heard who might be involved. What was the next one? Oh, the first. That one's interesting. I'm not sure what that's gonna be about, because I mean, all the names are prominently, pretty much all the major characters that are prominent right now in just various different sizes to fit into first, you know. Is there any symbolism to whose name is larger, who's more prominent, you know, stuff, or is it just that that's how they fit it with the names to make that logo? The 52 with the scratches, obviously we all go Wolverine. I already said I'm calling it now, it's 52 Shades of Adamantium. That's what's coming from Marvel. That's what we're getting, Ran.
Oh,
I'm telling you.
God, like we need to hear any more Wolverine.
Hey, they're doing crazy shit with Wolverine. Apparently in Extreme X-Men, he's gay and hitting up Hercules.
Oh, God, really?
That's what I read this in a news article recently. I wish
hey,
I could find
what?
It.
If anybody could take a Hercules
that yeah. Implies Wolverine would be the
I totally read that article. I could not believe it.
He's got adamantium. He's got that adamantium butthole.
And apparently they were dropping hints all through the book about that. So, you know, Wolverine, apparently there is nothing you can't do with Wolverine. You know, I guess it helps that it's an Ultimate Universe or whatever, but...
Well, they apparently ran out of ideas.
No, well, it's not the first time that they've had a pseudo-gay interaction with Wolverine, even though in the Ultimate Universe it was one-sided. It was more Colossus who kind of hit on Wolverine.
That was awesome.
That was a great scene. Awesome. That, you know?
When Northstar flirted with him,
yeah.
He armed up instantly. Yeah. I'll never forget that one.
So you know,
go for it. You know, if Wolverine enjoys men every once in a while, makes him. Hey, hold on, isn't he?
He's lived around long enough.
Why not? As long as the guy's happy.
That's it.
Hey, you know.
But yeah. So I'm totally thinking that that has to do with Wolverine. Obviously, I mean, it couldn't be any more blatant. If it's not Wolverine, I don't know who else it would be. But yeah, interesting teases all around. Marvel loves dropping these little one-word hints or things like this down the pipeline to get everybody guessing and talking. So it's interesting stuff. I want to see what comes of it. Taser, what about you?
Well, honestly, none of that, you know, sparked any interest in me. I mean, the zombie thing, and granted, it's Romero. I still know. I look at, you know,
the lack of respect.
What?
Go on.
I'm just saying. I like Romero's movies. You know, I even Diary of the Dead. You know, I enjoyed it, but I don't. Well, even if it's a side book, and I read Mayberry stuff, and I'm still wondering, huh? You know, I'm not stoked. You know, I guess for all of this, I'm kind of, yeah, I'm going to stay on the fence here for quite a bit longer until, you know, maybe I see more. I see something that kind of goes, ooh, that looks interesting. But for the bulk of it, actually for all of it right now, I have no love. You know, there's no hate either. Just it's like meh to me. You know, it doesn't do anything. You know, I got nothing else. I'm not that interested. It hasn't moved me. There you go.
All right, and Brian, any more thoughts on those?
I counter your Wolverine argument with saying the book is going to be 52 Ways to Die featuring Jean Grey.
Either one of those, man. Could be.
Yeah. Other than that, though, no. If Romero actually does author a Marvel Zombies book, I will be so excited. I don't think I'll be able to contain my nerd boner. But yeah, the first one is clearly the most intriguing just because of how just ambiguous it is. There's really nothing there to judge what the hell it's going to be. I mean, I don't know. I'm looking forward to really just finding out what this stuff is and then going from there because I really have no idea how to feel about any of this without having any more information at my disposal. But, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't think any of them had like dates on them. Do they have teaser dates?
Just general seasons, I think.
Yeah, so like we don't even know how much closer. We have so many, or at least two major events coming up between Age of Ultron and
Age of Ultron.
Yeah, that's starting in like 2 weeks. Infinity thing that they're teasing for after Age of Ultron is done. So who knows when we'll see these or how soon it's happening.
For a second, I thought you guys said Age of Voltron. I was about to get happy.
Age of Voltron.
Oh, my God. I would be happy, too.
I'd check it out. I would totally check it out. All right. Well, let's move on to the next bit of news.
Yes. In case you might have forgotten, and really who could blame you considering the lack of press around this thing so far, Fantastic Four's getting a reboot. You know, but what isn't nowadays? But, yeah. Fox is rebooting the franchise with Mark Miller on board as a creative consultant. And Mr. Miller was kind enough to tweet to us that Matthew Vaughn, once thought to be directing Days of Future Past, will be producing Josh Trank's Fantastic Four reboot. And on top of that, Seth Graham Smith has been working a little bit on the screenwriting of this book. Or the movie, I should say. He is the author behind Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which was adapted into a movie. He also penned the Dark Shadow script, Tim Burton's movie. And so he will be doing some touching up on that script, the Fantastic Four reboot. Thoughts on this?
Now, is he the main scriptwriter, period, or is he just doing touch-ups on it?
He was said to have been just touching up the script. He was doing some quote-unquote polishing, as it was said in the article.
Okay. Like, you know, that kind of works for me because, you know, as I said before or earlier in pre-show, I both read and saw Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, and apparently he was the screenwriter for the movie, as well as being the author of the book, which makes it odd for me because I didn't like the movie all that much at all, and I rather enjoyed the book. So it's peculiar. So I haven't seen Dark Shadow, so I don't know if that was any better with him being the screenwriter for that.
Well, it was based on a 1970s soap opera about a vampire.
Right,
so
which it can still be fun, but you know, it's Tim Burton-esque and stuff, and he did work on on that whole thing. So if it was good, great, but again, I haven't seen it, so I can't use that as a judge, but if just going off of how I felt about book versus screenwriting of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, I was kind of but if it's just polishing, maybe I'm not as hesitant, and who knows, maybe it's just a one-time deal, or maybe it's because he's directing his own stuff, maybe he's just not that good at directing his own things.
The thing that I try to take away from this is that the man behind the original script, Jeremy Slater. Mm-hmm. I'm currently browsing his IMDb page because I didn't know who he was at first. And there's a good reason. The Fantastic Four script is his first work credited to him. So you know, maybe having someone a bit more versed in writing this kind of stuff would be a welcome addition.
Because
I'm literally staring at his IMDb page. There's nothing here. There's just the Fantastic Four screenplay, and that is it.
Alrighty. Wow. Good stuff.
Yeah, so we'll see where it goes from here. I myself, I actually haven't seen anything he has done. So yeah. I'm kind of like, you know, I'm like a vested virgin when it comes to this dude. But we'll see what happens. I have some, you know, amount of faith in him, I hope. I just hope all of a sudden throughout the movie, you know, Reed Richards doesn't start killing zombies or, you know, vampires or something. Although that would be kind of awesome. but no.
Reed Richards Vampire Hunter?
Yeah, Marvel Zombies. Surprise, yeah. It was actually Marvel Zombies the whole time.
Right.
Hi-ho!
There you go.
Oh, and just before I pass off the taser real quick, I just want to say that I love how in the press release for this, they credit Sue Storm as the Invisible Girl.
I saw that. I totally caught that.
I think that's fucking priceless.
Like, I saw that, totally.
Oh, people really? Are gonna be mad at that.
No woman? I'm sure it's just the article.
Nah, she's a girl. She's fine.
I highly doubt that that's what she'll be called. People will be pissed.
Oh, Jesus. You know, the feminists, those fem-Nazis, they're going to be,
Like, what? What'd you just call me? She flipped out. It reminds me of that Robot Chicken sketch for Wonder Woman, where Batman calls Wonder Woman Wonder Girl. She flips her shit. That was actually just on last night. I could see Sue Storm flipping the fuck out.
Actually, you know my favorite Wonder Woman one? The one where they had to fight their reverse heroes, Bizarro, yes. Reverse Flash, and
that was great.
Reverse Wonder Woman. Oh no! Where's my visible jet? Look at my costume. The main part is. That was awesome.
So great. But yeah, so that'll do it for news. Some good, interesting stuff. Marvel always giving us some super secret things to talk about, dropping their little hints and teasers, and getting everybody all up in a flurry of until what could be and what out. Might be. And then it happens, and we're all like, oh, can we go back a couple of months to when we were all excited and wonder and full with childish wonder and abandon?
No.
No, not for you. You're just going to have to deal.
Oh, Mr. Superman.
No. No. Oh, man. All right.
Oh, yeah, that happened.
So good stuff on the news. Good stuff on the news. We'll see what comes out of those things and if it's anything good or stuff we like or if it bombs and they'll give us something to be angry about. Unless you're Taser, who's just always angry about all of the things.
Yeah.
Arrgh.
Angry little boy.
All right. Next, we're going to move on to our book of the week. This week's book is the all-new Nova number 1, part of the Marvel Now. I'm going to start this off right off the bat for anybody that's read Old Nova or Guardians of the Galaxy and stuff. 1, this is my first introduction into anything into that realm, so I have no clue. 2, anyone looking for the other Novas that you know and love, this isn't the case. Apparently, this is the brand shiny new 15-year-old Nova. Nova for the kids. So this book starts off with a big kind of space, epic space fight going on This is all being laid out between a conversation with one of the previous Novas, Jesse Alexander, who's relaying this to his son Sam Alexander and kind of just remembering the past, sharing old war stories, as it were, as people tend to do. And in this book, we find out that they're part of the Black Helmet Nova Corps, which, again, I didn't even know there was a separation of colors. The Black Nova Corps as opposed to
you and me both.
Gold Helmet Nova Corps.
The rest of America.
Yeah, I knew all of everything I've seen is Gold Helmet. What very tiny bit of Ultimate Spider-Man I've watched, it's Gold Helmet Nova. So, again, news to me. We cut back to pseudo present day, or 6 months ago, as it were, and you see that Jesse is in a bathroom, just threw up apparently, but he's in the bathroom having the conversation with his son and relaying the story. You find out he's a janitor at a school and his son's kind of been helping him out and is bringing him home. Dad's kind of drunk, you know, I don't want to say deadbeat dad because he doesn't seem like a bad father. He seems like the dude who's, you know, who's been in war. So he's either drinking to forget or drinking to remember, you know, those kind of things, or to keep the nightmares at bay. So he drags him home, lays him to bed, and Sam goes inside, has a conversation with his mother and his sister. You know, he's kind of taking the role of the pseudo-father figure in the house, even though he's kind of a dick. That understandable kind of a dick that comes from a broken home. I get it, but still, dude, you say such horrible things, whether or not you think your dad's stories are real. You know, he's even trying to ruin it for his sister, that kind of stuff. Like, stop being such a jerk. I know you're angry, but be nice. Then we cut to him in school. As typical, he's kind of the bullied kid in school, made fun of because his father is the janitor of the school. He has a conversation with the principal, and the janitor states, I'm sorry, the principal states that, you know, his father, your father's barely around, you know, his attendance record's almost as bad as yours or even worse than yours, you know. So we find out through the course of it that Sam has actually been covering for his father, and he's been the one cleaning up the school and doing all the kind of janitorial work so his father can still kind of keep his job and make money to help his family. We cut back again to 15 years ago, right before Sam was born, and we see the last mission that Jesse was on with the rest of the Black Helmet Nova Corps, and they're about to be attacked, but they're close to Earth, so one of the other members, Ziz, I'm going to pronounce his name, I guess, because it's just three Zs.
Yeah, that looks right.
So I'm going to go with Ziz. It says, you know, we'll never be this close to Earth. The Black Helmet Nova Corps isn't supposed to take families, but you had to go and find yourself a wife, and you've got a family to worry about and potentially a kid on the way. You need to go, and that's the end of it all. So they send him back. He's still, when he gets back, his son is born. He ends up becoming a family man, and he's still got his helmet, you know, and I'm sure he's got his uniform stashed somewhere. I'm sure we're going to see that come up at some point. And you see him come home, he's telling stories to his little girl, and Sam comes home again and continues to be kind of a jerk, and, oh, his stories are all BS, I don't know why he keeps telling them, he can't even keep them straight. And his mom yells at him, and he gets upset, and he runs off and kind of skateboards to the end of town, clears his head, comes back, has a conversation with his sister, and the sister's like, you know, you should believe him. I don't know why you think that stuff isn't true or that he's a great guy. You know, your father's awesome. Then it cuts to the next day again where he goes back to school and gets into a fight, to which he finds out that his father didn't show up to work at all. He runs home all upset and starts to yell at his father that, you know, I got suspended because of you, because I got into a fight because of you. Come to find out that the bed is completely clear. The shed that he's been sleeping in is kind of in all disarray. I think like a wall is broken up and the helmet is gone. So Sam runs off and is like, no, you're not leaving us like this. You know, you're not just going to up and disappear on us out of nowhere with no kind of word, and grabs his skateboard and runs off, hits a rock, slams his head into the ground, and then ends up waking up 3 days later.
Because he hit himself pretty bad, I guess.
3 days?
Yeah, he was out for 3 days. I think that's what it says. Hold on. Yeah. Was you're in the hospital, Sam. You've been out for 3 days. But, you know, right before he passed out, the symbol that they make is kind of the Nova Corps symbol from the helmet. I don't know if that's supposed to be the last thing he saw, that kind of light. And while they cut through panels of him in the hospital, the doctor checking on him, his sister checking on him, his mom checking on him, and you see little glimpses of space, and you see a star get brighter, and it starts to shoot down onto Earth, and you hear two people having a conversation in his room, and Sam wakes up to find Rocket Raccoon, and I believe it's Gamora, is that correct?
Yeah.
Saying, you know, wake up, kid, we gotta talk about your dad, so, and that's where it leaves us with to be continued. So, who knows, did dad get kidnapped? Did he actually up and leave? It seems like the big part, or the first part of the story seems to be, we're off to either save and or find Sam's dad. And that was Nova number one. It was a good book. It was good not knowing anything. I didn't dislike it. I thought the writing was pretty good. The conversations between Sam and his dad were good. You know, it's all quippy. It's kind of got that Spider-Man feel, and even with the young, angsty teen kind of deal, you get that feel to it. As I said to Taser, it's kind of got Peter Parker angstiness with the alpha kind of jerk mentality, and he even mentioned kind of Kyle Rayner kind of deal. It's all emotions and anger and angst and teenage woe and leave me alone, but I'm, you know, a dick, but with the heart of gold kind of deal. So it wasn't terrible. I'm not too sure yet if I'm going to pick up the next one. The art I did like very much so. This was Ed McGuinness, I believe it was. Big fan.
He's always solid art.
Yeah, it was really nice. You know, good lines, everything. And nice, smooth. He did young Sam well, and some people tend to have difficulty doing kids. Especially the teenage years, that's kind of awkward for people to draw, which I guess is fitting because that's an awkward time of a series of years for teenagers. Some people, either they're supposed to be like 15, 16, and they'll look 30, or they'll look like they're 2. You know, it's really weird, but he captures it well. Like, he does look like a 15-year-old, like a 15-year-old kid should look. His sister looks like she's maybe about 8 or 9, I would assume. So, it was a solid read. All in all, I would give it a 3.5 out of 5. And next we will go to, no, we will go to Brian first.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think I was the only one here who initially checked out this little Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon when it first hit. Because, you know, people were all upset that Spectacular Spider-Man was coming back. And
I watched some of it.
Hey,
I did.
You know, what the hell. Yeah, I didn't like him in the cartoon. I didn't like the cartoon, period. But, you know. Other discussion. But, no, I didn't like him. I dropped the cartoon pretty soon after that, and when I saw this, I initially thought when I first saw him in ABX it wasn't the same kid from the cartoon. Then I realized pretty quickly, oh, wait, yeah, it is. It's that kid. And no offense to Jeff Loeb, because this was a decent issue, but the way you introduced him was probably one of the poorest executions I think ever handled. He's given, I think, maybe a few lines of dialogue in point one, one of those promo books that you know no real comic person is going to buy. He ends that story by saying, "Epic fail," as a planet literally is incinerated behind him. And his whole story arc in AVX is that he crashes, and he didn't show up again until the very last issue where he tackles Cyclops before getting the shit knocked out of him again. Which, admittedly, takes some balls, but hey. So I kind of went into this initially not liking this kid. I didn't really think there was much to him. He seemed paper thin to me. And this comic didn't do much to alleviate my concerns. I still do not like this kid to an extent. He feels very, I don't know how, if you could say forced. Like, he feels like he's forcing whatever the point of his character is supposed to be. The role of Nova itself, I don't think he deserves it or earned it. I would much have preferred Richard Rider to take back the Nova role, or even better yet, get his brother. I think it was who was his
Robbie.
Brother? The one? Yes, thank
Robbie.
You. Yeah, Robbie Rider. Well, get one of them. I'm just saying that when you have a whole, well, not so much now anymore, but still. With Marvel now, you could have easily brought in Richard Rider or Robbie Rider or somebody to take up this role. You could have done a million different things, and yet you give us this kid, Tim Alexander, who I do not like, has a paper-thin characterization that you could have seen coming a mile away, as Arnold coined it, you know, the dick with a heart of gold. I just didn't like this issue. It felt really, really poor. And I don't know if that's just for me having read enough Marvel Cosmic to have finally looked at this and said, yeah, this kind of sucks. Compared to some of the other stuff I've read, it does suck. And Jeff Loeb, dude, really? Still, you're doing this? Really? I'm surprised he doesn't get more death threats. I think Dan Slott took some of the heat off of this guy because really he doesn't know. I can't cope with his writing. Ed McGuinness, admittedly, I do love his art. I'm a sucker for his artwork just because I think it's so, it really is just shiny and cartoony, and I find some, you know, real enjoyment in that. But Jeff Loeb, it's just, yeah. And Sam Alexander's, yeah. So, yeah, I kind of rate this book really low. I'll give it I'll round up and give it a 2 out of 5, just as is, because it really did
round
not impress
up to
me.
A 2 out of 5, wow.
So, yeah, it was just above a 1.5, so I'm like, yeah, I'll just give him a 2. But, yeah, it really didn't resonate with me. So, gets 2 Warriors out of 5, and is consequently a piece of number 2. Moving on.
I guess I'm up.
That'd be you, boy.
Yes, sir. Taser, okay. I guess you continuing the hate, continuing in the middle of the road. Let's see.
I don't want to say hate. Let's just say perplexed, you know?
Disappointment.
a bit of disappointment, too. I realize that most books nowadays, they're more concerned with letting the writer tell whatever story it is that they want to tell, regardless of what it does to anything that comes before or may come after, you know, they're on the book. But, you know, I would think that the editors, you know, in charge might exercise some form of restraint, you know, to kind of go, hey, you know, you can't really do this because. But here, this is not the case. You know, Nova 1, the not the first page, but the second, you know. We have, you know, the Human Nova and his two partners, and they apparently came to the rescue of Rocket Raccoon and Gamora 17 years ago, already acting as Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay, now, it wasn't that long ago that we had a Guardians of the Galaxy book where Peter Quill and Gamora and Drax and who was it? Quasar and Rocket Raccoon and Groot and Mantis were running around in nowhere acting as the Guardians of the Galaxy for the first time. That formed the group up. So here in this book, second page in, Rocket Raccoon and Gamora are already acting and wearing the costume, you know? So, seriously, Loeb? I mean, you just kind of went and took, oh, well, Rocket Raccoon, yeah, he's going to be in the movie and Gamora's going to be in the movie. And, yeah, I'm going to put them here and they're already Guardians of the Galaxy. The last title isn't even 5 years old. So, how do you do that? You know, that's like saying Spider-Man gets Alpha his powers, and 3 years later we find out that Alpha was already born with his powers. Right. And Spider-Man did something to accelerate them, but he knew that. You know, for whatever reason, that's the new reality, you know. Or better yet, you know, Alpha wasn't like 16 or whatever. Alpha was 32, you know, or something insane like that, because that's what the writer wanted. No. Loeb, you fucking dick. Seriously. I mean,
good.
You.
Let the hate flow through you.
And, you know, I wanted to like this because, well, you know, I knew we weren't getting Richard Rider. I read the last Nova series, and, you know, I remember what happened to him. And you know what? As much as I do kind of not like heroes dying, because, you know, unfortunately, we know what happens when heroes die. They get brought back a la fucking Black Bolt by Hickman just because. You know, I feel like bringing them back. You know, nobody respects death anymore. So that's why you have things like Johnny Storm being brought back a year later than he died, because it was freaking fantastic.
Well, he technically didn't die.
He did die, but you knew he was going to be brought back. If you're going to die, die and be gone. You know, come on now.
Die.
But, you know, I mean, death should mean something. I mean, if you're going to tell a narrative, then you don't trivialize it. I believe in that, you know. Even as much as I'm the guy who's like, fuck the words, give me the action, still, I believe in the sanctity of the act. You know, if the hero's going to go out, let him go out. Here, you know, Loeb just doesn't care. He's just trying to, hey, look, I'm getting paid to put out a book. Not even getting paid to tell a story. I'm getting paid to put out a book. So you've got, you know, this human Jesse and his two partners. And, you know, like was said before, I'm guessing these guys are like Deep Cover or something like that. You know, Shadow Op.
Yeah.
Nova Corps members. And on top of you know, the Dark Helmets, we also have Jesse firing off a gravimetric burst. Novas couldn't do that.
Gold Novas can't, apparently. But we got these are Black Novas.
Well, you know, that might be it.
These
are
Black Novas,
Black
man.
Black Novas can. You know, Gold Novas couldn't. But, you know, and you get, like I said, the Guardians of the Galaxy thing. And Jesse, you know, has to go home because he's got a kid. And he ends up being a janitor. And his son's all, Dad, oh, my God. Jeez, Dad. Oh, God. Gee. Okay, yeah, fine. Whatever.
I hate you.
And like I had said before, I see this as, you know, Jamie Reyes, and, you know, with some Kyle Rayner and some Peter Parker, you know, high school bullshit thrown in there just to give it that Marvel flavor. And unfortunately, this is something to make him relatable. You know, there's that magic word for comics, relatable.
Yep.
Although you kind of have to wonder about the kid, because the kid knows about the helmet, you know, and he's a kid in America, you know, superhumans exist. So you've got this helmet here that is like, I mean, it looks alien. You know, clearly your father's not, his father wasn't making this shit up.
Right.
Because later on when he goes after his dad and, you know, he discovers, hey, what the hell is this big asshole? And the helmet's gone. Rather than go, oh, no, something happened to Dad, I've got to go find him, or I've got to go tell Mom or whatever, he thinks, damn it, Dad, he's out on a bender. I'm going to kick it, you know. And I'm like, huh? How do you go from seeing big hole in this shed, space helmet missing, to Dad's out drinking somewhere, I've got to go get him, bring him home? You know,
that's because what his dad's been, apparently that's what his dad always does. I don't know if he always takes the helmet with him, but
I get the whole going out drinking thing, but that's like coming home, seeing a big ass hole in your house and thinking, oh, the wife must have burnt the dinner.
Right? Yeah, you it's know? The hole in the house part that I understand. Like,
the hell,
if there was
no
destruction, maybe.
Exactly, but you know, here we have something that looks problematical. And he's got the most mundane reaction to it. And then, you know, he ends up, you know, cracking his skull and whatever. So then, you know, at the end of the book, and then, you know, Gamora and, you know, freaking RR shows up. And he's standing there. I'm like, you know what? Not for nothing, but like a 3-foot-tall raccoon talking to me would probably spook me the fuck out of me also. Because look at see the look in that kid's face. He's like, what the, yeah. You know? I'll give him that look, nice and authentic. And again, kudos to McGinnis art. But there's just so much to this story here that's both trite, predictable, annoying, and at the same time intriguing. Intriguing because I want to know what's going on here. You know, I'm trying to figure out what's with the black helmets. And, you know, where the dad went and all this other stuff. And because it's, you know, it's the Marvel Spacey. You know, I dig the Spacey stuff. So, I'm still caught by the hook, but I'm annoyed. You know, I mean, first issue in and
damn
I'm
straight,
going,
Skippy.
You know?
Damn straight.
I mean, Loeb, really? He didn't even do homework. If he did homework, he didn't bother to care and just went, yeah, this won't work here and here and here and here. But you know what? Just like my pal Jeff Johns, I won't give a fuck, and I'm going to just do it anyway. You know? And people will buy the book because. And damn it, if I actually pay for this book, that's what would happen to me. So, if you're looking for something different, this, unfortunately, isn't that different. You know, this is kind of typical, but it isn't in the whole Avengers or Spider-Man or X-Men franchise. It lays outside of that. So maybe this might turn out to be something in the long run that was worthwhile. Right now,
unlikely.
Yeah, it's shaky, but I'll be there next issue. It's going to get my standard, you know, 3-6 issue test. You know, I'll give it Damn. I'll give it a 3.4. A lot of that for the art, because McGinnis's art was solid in this. I mean, really solid. And not for nothing, he knows how to draw Gamora. Hot damn. But yeah, Loeb. I want to see where Loeb takes it. I'm crossing my fingers. Maybe it might get, you know, less distracting and more interesting. But, well, there you go. I'm hoping he does better next issue. Because I do want to like this. I do want to enjoy something that lays outside the three realms that Marvel's really trying to play up now. And we'll see what happens come next month.
All right. Good all-around book of the week. We got one.
A pox on your house, Jim.
one major hate, one middle of the road, and one pseudo-disappointed, but willing to continue on. So
yeah,
I guess not too terrible all around. Okay, next we're going to move right along to individual reviews. I'm going to start with, this is a book from week before last, but I really did want to review it. We have Uncanny X-Men number one. As we know, we are still very much dealing with, or most primarily, Scott Summers is dealing with all of the fallout from Avengers vs. X-Men, killing Xavier, you know, escaping from prison, whether escaping or let out or helped to escape by Magneto. I'm not sure because I didn't read the mini or little brief stint that they had while he was in prison, so I can't remember how he got out. But regardless, at the beginning of this book, we open up with the new Agent Coulson and the brand spanking new Nick Fury, also known as Black Fury by some, for distinction purposes, I guess, and Maria Hill are in an underground, undisclosed S.H.I.E.L.D. interrogation bunker, and somebody has apparently just shown up out of nowhere and has been asking for Maria Hill and wants to sit down and talk to her. She's kind of doing the standard procedure, you know, taking all the necessary protocols, does he have any weapons, et cetera, et cetera. We don't get to see who this person is. They're hidden in shadow, or we only see views of them from the back or just from the chin down. But this person comes in and lays down a little piece of tech and pulls up a globe or a map of the world showing all the different lights of mutants that are popping up in the world post-Avengers versus X-Men, with the Phoenix Force being dispersed all over the world and quite possibly even the cosmos. And explaining to him that they're growing in numbers and lots more mutants are going to be coming into the fold, and Scott is starting to gather up a lot of these mutants as well as support from some humans as well. And he's kind of becoming this almost larger-than-life kind of spokesperson, whether it's for, you know, mutant pride, right? As far as Scott's concerned, it's all about pseudo-promoting mutants, not necessarily in the peaceful way that Xavier was known for. And he's rallying him up, and this man is pretty much telling Maria that he's going to start grabbing all these people, and he's getting dangerous. He's got quite the crew on his side already, you know. He's got someone that is learning to control time. He's got the witch or the magic, as we know her as, another person who can heal people, and a new person we just saw whose, I think, body can kind of turn into bombs or this weird kind of electricity balls of some sort, but it's hard to kind of describe yet. Who knows? It's just a whole bunch of shit bouncing around, people getting knocked out. Throughout all of the course of this, Magneto is relaying all of this to Maria Hill about their most recent fight or trying to acquire one of these new mutants, and Sentinels are sent to attack them, so a fight ensues. Scott orders Magic to take away the newer mutants because they're not ready for stuff like this yet, and they essentially go to work on the Sentinels. Magneto tries to take some of them down, starts to have some little difficulty, but then just turns around and whoops ass. And out of all of this, and with, again, Magneto stating the amount of power that he's got behind him, on top of all of that, his powers don't work. And we cut to a scene and we see Scott just let all hell break loose and decimated at least two or three Sentinels by himself, like completely wiped them out. And to which Maria responded, you know, I thought you said his powers aren't working or that they're gone. And he said that they're not working. He can't control them anymore. So as it seems, as a direct result, however they're trying to explain it now, apparently being exposed to the Phoenix Force makes your powers all erratic now. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that one because it didn't seem to happen to Jean all that much. But okay, whatever. If that's what you want to tell us, that's fine. So as we get into this, the man there says, I don't think this is something we should stand for, but you also can't kill him, because if you kill him, you're going to turn him into a martyr, and that'll make him even bigger than he was, and you'll have a whole shit ton of problems on your hands. And Marie asks this guy, what do you want from me, or why are you doing this, And we find out that it's actually Magneto who's there. So now Magneto is totally not about what's going on. He thinks that Scott is ruining the dream that him and Charles used to have. But mind you, their views or their ways of going about it vary greatly, but at its core, it was essentially somewhat the same thing. One was peaceful, one was not so much peaceful, but it was just acceptance for mutants all around. And he thinks that it's being bastardized by Scott, and he wants nothing to do with it. So it looks like we're going to have Mags trying to bring down this team, or at least bring down Scott Summers from the inside. All in all, right off the bat, I'm going to give this book a 4 out of 5. I thought it was fun. It is a little cliche, but I didn't really see the Magneto thing coming. And shaved head Magneto. All the hair's gone, I don't know if this is... Can we call Mag's midlife crisis now? I mean, he's been aged and de-aged and re-aged so many times. I'm not even sure how old he's supposed to be.
PTSD from his Holocaust days.
Right. It's only catching up to him now. I really did. I liked it. It's definitely got me on board. I would say this is another X-book to be adding to the pile. So between this and All-New X-Men, I'm digging the new sets of X-books that are coming around. Art, Bachalo is, again, always hit or miss with me. Somebody posted an article really recently that all of his women almost have like the same exact costume. There's a collar, the top of the midriff is completely exposed, and that's the way Emma's black costume pretty much looks like now. And I hate Magneto's costume. I think it looks fucking stupid. The whole sleeveless thing, no thanks. It's like he raided Phantom X's closet, ripped a couple of sleeves off of it, changed some things around, and then put it on. Not a fan at all. I hope it changes at some point. And way back in the day, we've made many jokes in previous shows about our Racer X Cyclops, so that is what it is. It hasn't made his optic beams come out in big X's yet, I don't think, so I'm kind of glad that's not happening, because I hate when they do cheesy shit like that. That's right up there with Professor Xavier's chair. Oh, the wheels always of it always landing in the X shape. Like, never is it look. Never does it look like
wrong
a plus
with
sign.
Advisor. I don't get it.
You know, I hate when they do stuff like that in comics. So I'm glad. I know at some point they're going to do it and it's going to happen. But I'm all right with not seeing giant red X's coming out of it. It would look like Flying Image did not post things at people. That you get on message boards. That's what it would look like to me. But like I said, all around, 4 out of 5, it's definitely got me on board. And considering I was falling off of Uncanny X-Men way back before Avengers vs. X-Men, this has definitely got me excited for the book again. So I'm on board for 2. And next we are going to go to Brian, who has got who's got Daredevil issue number 23. Brian, take it away.
You are correct, sir, yes. For those of you who have been reading Daredevil, I don't need to recap you. For those of you who haven't been, let me recap you. Daredevil has been made to seem like he is going crazy. He is not, but he is very clearly a marked man. That much has been made clear to him. So much so that Foggy Nelson, Matt's best friend and continual partner in the law firm, finally turned his back on him, said, "You're crazy, that's enough," and they kind of parted ways for a little bit. They recently reunited, however, when Foggy let Matt know that he may be dealing with some life-threatening disease, possibly cancer. We're not given anything, basically. The tests have not come back yet. A little soap opera-ish, but what we get in this issue is a lot of character moments. This is almost entirely driven between the interactions of Matt Murdock and Foggy Nelson, and they're reuniting over his medical predicament. We get some really great, like, banter, like, in anticipation of it possibly being the worst. Daredevil has decided to, just kind of show Foggy around the world, New York, the way he sees it. And so he literally takes him, like, swinging across the city, although I don't know how he does it with Foggy Nelson hanging off his back. But, hey, it's Daredevil. Why not? And we get one brilliant scene where, Daredevil's kind of talking to Foggy, and Foggy kind of puts aside his concerns over his health and kind of asks Matt how things are going on with him. Of course, Matt says that he's a marked man. Someone's out to get him. Someone's been playing this seamlessly. And then it comes possibly at the best time, too. Foggy Nelson straight up suggests, yeah, the last one you'd expect, Matt. I know who the mastermind is who's after you. It's Stilt Man. And they bust out laughing. My God, Stilt Man. Yeah, right. Like, literally, that's pretty much how it goes down. Just like, yeah, right, Stilt Man. And then about a little just over halfway through the book, we get the conflict of the issue. In the beginning, we're shown scientists, or what we think is a flashback, presumably, to Matt Murdock saving the person and then getting blinded. But really, it's people trying to recreate the accident that gave Matt Murdock his hypersensitivity. And basically, the first panel is just some guy rushing to help this old dude. And the accident doesn't go quite as planned because he just gets burnt to a crisp in just this nuclear fluid. And they show a line of inmates lined up, ready to go, rushing in next for the next attempt. And I really don't know what it is. It's not really specified exactly who it is running these experiments. But I assume AIM. It sounds like something they'd be into. But again, we're not giving a definitive answer. But that's not the point. The point is, Matt basically has to leave Foggy to go and deal with all these people, these hypersensitive people who have been unleashed on the city. And basically, Matt elaborates it as, his first day with his hypersenses, he was almost driven mad to the point of how much was happening around him. Because New York City, it's a big, big place. Stuff is always happening. So obviously, if you have hypersenses, they're not tuned, you're going to be hearing, smelling, a whole bunch of others, feeling. You're basically going to be, your senses are going to be assaulted. And that's basically what's happening here. These guys are like wild animals running around with their eyes, just essentially useless to them. And sonar sense, hyper hearing, all that stuff. And Matt basically spends the night before Foggy is supposed to be getting his test results back, tracking these guys down after they've kind of scattered. And what we get at the end is what we think, what we're led to believe, is Foggy being let down by Matt. But thankfully, Matt shows up at the last minute. The bromance between these two is palpable. And we go into this, and it ends on we're led to believe it'll end on a high note. Yeah, it doesn't really happen. Foggy's got something bad. Oh. Yeah, he has cancer.
Bum, bum, bum!
And Matt Murdock is so sad for his friend. Yeah, Foggy has cancer, and Matt Murdock is sad, angry, et cetera, et cetera. So now on top of Matt Murdock being pretty much chased down by every sort of criminal syndicate you can imagine, he also has his best friend's possibly impending death to deal with, which is something very, very serious. The issue was done impeccably well. I dare say it's probably my favorite issue so far. I mean, Wade keeps setting the bar higher and higher, and this one delivered just on the fact alone that Matt Murdock and Foggy Nelson have perhaps one of the most complex and close relationships I think could be developed between two men in comic books.
And Wolverine.
Well, fair enough.
That's more dysfunctional.
Yeah. But bromances, as far as bromances go, they have one of the top five. Anyway, it really does show well how they interact with each other, their history together, how they play off one another. The character behind these two is really what drives a large part of the issue, and that's a really, really good thing. Because it's important to remember that while, there's Daredevil, there's also Matt Murdock. And starting out, that was what really hooked me with the series, that Wade was as caring with the handling of Matt Murdock as he was with Daredevil. And, of course, Foggy Nelson gets his moments, too. And the action and plot line of the quote-unquote villains ain't bad either. It really is interesting to see these people trying to recreate Daredevil's life-altering experiment and just, I don't know, failing miserably because these guys get toasted. But there was also Chris Somney on art. He did a great, great job. I love his use of just shadowing. And all the artists on this book have been impeccable, by the way. Just really, really well done. This issue was a real high note for me, even though the ending wasn't so great. I give it a 4.5 out of 5, really. Actually, no, scratch that. 5 out of 5. I'm going there. I'm going
there.
Oh, no.
I went there. Perfect.
Perfect.
What up? For any person who is a real, true, avid fan of the history of Daredevil and Foggy Nelson and who just, you know, likes character-driven stories, this is a great series in and of itself, but this issue stands out, really. It's a very well-done character piece. So I give it a thumbs up, really.
All right. Well, wow,
I can
remember the last time we had a 5 out of 5. It was
just really good.
Hey, go for it. You seem to thoroughly enjoy it. You seem very much enthused by it, so that's cool. 5 out of 5. This first one, I guess, you know, with me at the helm, but I really can't remember the last time we had a 5 out of 5. I think it might have been something Iggy reviewed, that Ben reviewed a while back that he gave a 5 out of 5, but just don't recall what. Next and last but not least, we have Taser's pick of the week, which I'm still bewildered that he actually picked this up. Him of all people, like the fact that Taser picked up this book, it's got me bewildered. But he will be reviewing Alpha Big Time #1. Taser, go for it. Let's see this madness.
Yeah, buddy.
You know what? Like I said, I just kind of wanted to see how. I didn't think when he took his powers away, I thought that was pretty quick, you know? I thought that was kind of, I won't say abrupt, but something told me he'd be around, you know? I mean, they threw too many big words, and he was too much of a problem for him to go away that quickly. So, yeah, sure enough, Alpha Big Time #1. And it starts off with Andy McGuire doing a bit of, he talks to the reader, talking about la 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 la, you know, Saved by the Bell shit. You know, you could basically get the gist of that. And, you know, the internals, unfortunately, Humberto Ramos does not do the majority of the internals in this book. We get some guy who, Nuni Plati, which to me sounds either Czech or Italian, because this really looks European. I mean, it really looks European. And his life has gone, you know, back down. I won't say down the crapper, but he's, you know, he's a nobody again, and nobody's looking at him. And my life sucks. Bleh. And he's, you know, he's seated at the table with the weird ones. You know, big fat, you know. A headgear dude and pink haired chick, you know, and the chick probably thinks she's better than him too. So, you know, what the fuck? So yeah, he's like, high school sucks for me. Wah. Gets, you know, beat up by some tool who's like, hey, you used to be somebody, right? You're not anymore. and you know that now that you don't have any powers, you'll never, literally never get laid again, right? He's like, yeah, so what's your excuse? I give him credit. That wasn't a bad one. Shut your mouth. He gets kneed in the balls. Yeah, you just saw that coming. And you know what? It's high school. It's high school. So apparently, since he had his powers taken away, Parker was doing this whole, okay, once a week you come in and, you know, you get tested and we write shit down and then you go home and we do it all over again in about a week. His parents divorced because, you know, they were really only there for what the kid could offer them. I mean, you could see that in, you know, when they introduced him. But now, of course, we don't have Peter Parker anymore. We've got Peter Ock. You know, whatever we're going to call him.
Otto Parker.
There you go. You know what I like?
I still like Dr. Spider-Rock. That's what I'm sticking with.
For an alter ego, fine.
Yeah, that's what I'm sticking with. Yeah, okay, fine. That's the alter ego.
Or a superhero name, maybe, but yeah. I like Otto Parker. That works.
It definitely works better than Peter Octavius.
Yeah. OP.
OP.
Oh, shit. Hey, it's Op.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Op's got the kid, and he's... And he sits him down, and, you know, they run through tests, and, you know, everything's kind of comical, and this kid's like, and Otto Parker decides, hey, you know what? We're going to take and give you about 10% of what you had before. Now, okay, you kind of knew it was going to come to this, and he's like, ooh, wow, hey, I feel different. All of this I could – well, they kind of list what he could do. Flight, energy blast, 9 vulnerability, low-level telekinesis, matter manipulation. Those last two right there, those are some nasty abilities for anybody to have. This kid having it, that's kind of scary because, you know, he was a numbnut. But anyway, like I said, he's down to 10% of what he was before. But he's been good, you know, so basically look at it as a bit of an early parole, so to speak. So the kid, you know, he flies out. He's like, wee, I can do shit again. Yay. But you know what? I'm going to be responsible. Da, 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 da. And first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to make myself a mask out of energy, which doesn't actually hide my face at all. And he does a good thing, though. He stops in front of there's a bunch of firemen trying to put out a fire. And what he does is he absorbs the oxygen, which basically snuffs everything out, you know, saving them the work and everything else like that. And he's like, that's right, citizens, blah, 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 hero speech, no, whatever. No, I wasn't Alpha before. That was somebody else. He flies off, and the firemen are like, yeah, that was totally that doofy kid from TV. Omega, right? Nah, I think it was Alpha Flight. You're an idiot. Alpha Flight is a robot. You know, okay, so guffaw, guffaw, laugh. Then he, you know, he's flying around. I'm looking to do the hero thing some more. And he finds some homeless, I don't know, meth user, you know, has grabbed onto this woman with a knife. He's, back off, dude. I'm going to stab her, and I need some money, right? And he's, you know, he's like, hey, look, don't bother doing this. Why, you know, why would you want to? Blah, 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 blah. The guy tries to stab him. You know, the knife is, what? Shoves the guy away. He tries to talk about some more. He pulls out a gun, you know, stops the bullet, you know. Then he goes to knock the guy's lights out. And the guy loses his head. I mean, literally, his head is blue flame. And that's where we end the book. Wow. Oh, shit. Alpha just offed somebody at 10% power.
Oh,
God. You know, like I said, it was fun. And then, you know, the kids said, they're like, okay, okay, okay. I'm in so much trouble right now. You know, it was funny. You know, it didn't have Ramos's art. Ramos's art really sold it the first time for me, you know? But, all right, it's lacking, and we get this guy here, whose art, for me, isn't that great. You know, it looks like a lot of those, what was it, like Epic or the Euro Comics, you know, like Humanoids. You know, from Humanoid Publishing, you know, like the Inkhal or Meta Baronish or some shit like that. Something from Europe. That's what this is like. And, you know, he's tall and thin and lanky. So, you actually, you know, you see a lot of those pseudo-hipster kids, you know, wearing the tight jeans because, well, they can't fill out anything else. But, you know, girls go, oh, he's wearing tight jeans. I'm like, pansy. But whatever, anyway. Story wasn't bad. Story's not bad, but I don't know. I guess who is his name? Joshua Hale.
The alcove.
Vykov.
The alcove. Yeah.
The alcove.
Yeah. Zarkov. That guy.
this guy.
Yeah, this dude here. It's a high school story about a guy who was nobody, became somebody, went back to being nobody, and now is trying to do good and be somebody again. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You know, it's an interesting start. I don't know if I'll be there for the next one. Because, I mean, you know, while the story, actually the story's not bad, but the art doesn't carry it. You know, you kind of need both. And the art actually bothers me a bit. You know, this kid is just like, I want to punch him in the face just because of the way he looks. You know, douchebag. You know, he's got eyebrows the size of a paintbrush. You know, and his face, he looks like, what's his name? Oliver Hardy. You know, the tall, thin one? He looks like him. And, yeah, I wanted to hit this guy. So, I don't know. I have to give this one my impressions of it. I have to give it a middle of the road. I give it a 3 warriors out of 5. I would say if you're interested in what happens to the alpha character, stick with it. Stick with it, you know, see how it goes. But if you don't give a rat's ass about alpha, seriously, avoid the book. You won't be served at all reading it. If you're looking for something a little bit different, then I would say pick it up. You know, something that's, it's not really too tied into the Spider-Man thing yet. So, you know, you might find some, you know, bit of enjoyment out of it. Other than that, I'd say leave it alone.
Alrighty, well, with that, this week we don't really have a topic to talk about, so I think with that, and Taser's yep.
Real quickly, if you don't mind, I just like to get your thoughts on the Spider-Man costume that was put forward.
Oh, yes, yeah, sure, by all means, go for it.
It looks like the comic book costume now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. It looks very much like Bagley's.
Yeah, but
didn't
the
Ultimate.
Last one also?
Not really.
Wait, in the most recent Amazing Spider-Man?
Yeah, ASM.
No, not really. And the eyes, really. The eyes were white.
Just the design was different.
Yeah, my biggest issues with the Spider-Man costume were the lower half, most notably the sneakers, the shoe part of it. The design didn't bother me that much, so I'm still waiting to see the rest of the costume, the full costume. But so far, it looks good. I'm digging the way it looks, the spider on it. It's a little bit updated, the texture look of the suit. It looks less snakeskin than the other one did, or less, like, fibery as the one in Amazing Spider-Man does. This one looks more web-esque. It is a little closer to Raimi's. I know a lot of people are complaining that, oh, they stole it or ripped it off. But Raimi's was essentially the original, so that's foolish to say, you know. So I won't say anybody's stealing anything from anybody, but I dig what I've seen so far.
Taser?
Okay. Do you care?
Do you care, Taser?
I'll say this. I thought it looked like the last one, personally, but I'm enjoying this. You know, I did enjoy ASM, and I think, you know, based on what we saw in that pic, it looked good. It looked better than Raimi's Spider-Man outfit, which I thought was just, it tried to show webbing. You know, it tried a little too hard for me. You know, I enjoyed this one. Yeah, hey, you know, I like what I saw. I look forward to the next movie. You know, keep it simple.
Coolio.
All right. And okay. and on that note, now we will close out the show. That does it for us, folks. By all means, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, you know, facebook.com/Warriors3, Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast, TW3 Podcast on Twitter. You can get us at Gmail, twthreepodcast@gmail.com. That's the number 3, not the word written out 3. Leave us some comments, some love, some hate, questions, little anecdotes, you know, pictures of giraffes with monkey heads on them. I don't know, something. Pick something random. Send us a picture from that new taxidermy show. Those crazy things that I've been seeing commercials for. Any plugs from anyone?
I think ECC is coming up in a couple of weeks.
Emerald City Comic Con is coming up. Yes, that is happening. I'm sure
we will have some of the news for that. For you, our faithful listeners.
Definitely, definitely. Even though I think Ben's going to that, right? And Ben usually goes to ECC, right?
Should we see if we can bring him back as like a correspondent?
Yeah, what I was going to say. Or maybe if we at least can't get him on the show, he can drop some news for us to post and stuff, like right when he hears it, if he makes it to any panels.
That
we can probably put that in the pipeline. I look forward to that. I know. Yeah. Speaking of cons,
if they make fun of Sailor Moon or My Little Pony stuff, I'm good to go.
Good to go. Speaking of cons, I know it's a bit of ways, but hotel sales and such went up for San Diego Comic-Con, and regular ticket sales came and went, waiting for resales. So yeah, a lot of cons coming up, and then of course New York Comic-Con in October. Always nice to mention the comic book conventions coming up out there. And if you know so many others, you're going to be at any others that you may want us to mention or talk about or invite people to, let us know. Again, drop us an email, Facebook, Twitter, any and or all of the above. And with that...
And if you have any pictures of your sisters dressed up as a comic book character...
There you go.
Drop us a notice.
We're big fans
also.
Of cosplay. Sister, or your brother. Or your brother. Or your brother. We'll give out...
But you'll get a thumbs up from me.
We'll get a no prize. We'll do the Warriors 3 no prize. Marvel doesn't do it anymore, so we should be fine.
Oh, we have a whole lot of those.
We got plenty of no prizes. We never run out. We never run out of no prizes. Well, all right, folks. Have a great night and a great week. Goodbye, all.
Stay See ya!
The Mighty Warriors 3, After Hours. Yeah.